Hello and welcome to Back Chat, your podcast all about scoliosis, yoga and back care. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry. I'm a yoga teacher, creator of the Yoga Berry Yoga for Scoliosis community and YouTube channel, and this show is all about supporting you on your scoliosis journey. So if you're looking for practical advice and inspiration on how to manage the condition with yoga and movement, then you're in the right place. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Back Chat. Thank you so much for tuning in. I had so many messages about this topic today. It's just something that I think we all want to know about, that is something that is going to be really relevant for so many of you, that's really practical as well. So feel free, even if you are watching this on the replay afterwards, feel free to leave your comments below, ask any questions. We will go into the video afterwards to hopefully be able to answer them as well. But obviously, if you are here live, then you can use the chat. So we are talking about nutrition today, scoliosis and nutrition. And I've got a fabulous health expert today. So let me bring her on and she can tell us all about what she does as well. So welcome, Debbie.
Thank you for having me, Christine. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time. So Debbie, can you take us into your world a little bit? So what is it that you do, and maybe give us a little bit of a background. Why are you doing what you're doing?
So I do what I do because at 50 years old, my hip joint collapsed. And at 51, I had a total hip replacement. So learning about bones and how important our bones are happened to me much earlier than it usually would. Most people get a DEXA scan. I'm in the US, you're in the UK, but the DEXA scan here is done typically around 60, 65. And there's usually a diagnosis of osteopenia, which is bone loss. Osteoporosis is the disease state of bone loss. So I had to learn about bones at the same time I was a yoga teacher teaching live classes, and I had to modify the practice for my own body. And I was working with the aging population, people 50 plus. So it was about getting strong muscles, strong body, strong bones safely. So this became, it chose me, because at 50 years old, who's really thinking about their bones? Unless you have some condition, like with you, right? In your teenage years, I think you started to have musculoskeletal issues. So that's really how I got into this. And that's the physical part of it. And then as I was going through perimenopause in my 40s, I felt like I was walking through quicksand, and I needed to figure out, I don't like medications. I will not take pills. So I'm like, okay, what can I do naturally to take care of myself? So I went through a functional health coach certification program where we ran functional labs, and we looked at inflammation and digestion and gut health. And it was just so amazing to go deep inside and to look at the function of your body. And then from there to start making those shifts that you need in order to get back into balance.
So can you tell us, so for those of us who don't really know anything about functional health, can you give us a little bit more? What does it actually mean? What's a functional health?
Okay, so we go to the doctors, we get tests, we get labs run. What they're looking for is diseases. So the markers that are on our labs that we go to a doctor for is, do you have diabetes, cancer, heart disease? They're looking for disease. So the ranges for disease are in this place here. So does everybody see this live, or some people just listen? Is there always visual with this presentation?
It depends. So you can listen to this also on Spotify. So not necessarily, yes, but okay. On YouTube, obviously people will have the video as well with it.
Okay. So I'll explain it because I'm doing something with my hands. I think this is important. Yeah. Say that there's a ruler that's 100, and at the very top end of that, let's say the 80, 90%, that range is disease. So that's what conventional medicine is looking for. Do you have this disease? Because if you do, we have the pill for it. And it's how the physicians are trained. They go to medical school to find the disease, and here is the pill for it. Well, you didn't just end up in that disease state. You had a time in your life where things were not optimal. And that's the functional range. So functional medicine goes before the disease range to look at where are things off with the liver, with the kidneys, with digestion, with inflammation. Because if we don't manage this now, if we don't make a change, then you're going to end up with the disease. So functional medicine is preventative. It's looking at, okay, you're on this pathway. How do we get you back to optimal? And then it's all lifestyle based. It's what you eat, how you move, how you think, how you manage your stress, how you sleep. And so then you bring in the lifestyle aspects of getting yourself back to a really healthy state.
Yes. Thank you for that. That makes sense. So let's talk about bone health. Why, what is the link here between nutrition and bone health? Why is nutrition so important?
Well, let's think about bone health first. Statistically, 1 in 2 women over age 50 will fracture a bone in her lifetime due to osteoporosis. So that's a reality for us. And if you look at that's that statistic, and if you fall and break a hip, I mean, there's just dire future, low quality of life potential outcomes of what happens. And what I notice with the women that I work with, let's say when you get to that 60, 65 year mark, women say, I wish I would have known what to do before this. So really bone loss begins in our 30s. Our bones break down faster after we leave our 30s than build up. So up until our 30s, our bones are building and then they break down faster when we leave our 30s. And what are the things that contribute to that? Our lifestyle. And the main one, I would say the most powerful tool that we have, well, I don't know if I could say it's the powerful because they're all together. It's not a one thing. It's not a one pill, one supplement, one exercise. One of the most powerful tools we have is food. And it's not just what you eat, what you should eat. It's also what you shouldn't eat that matters.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So we don't even think. So I when I eat, and let me actually add another layer to this, because it's not what you eat, it's what you absorb.
Right.
So if you eat, you think you have a really great diet, you think you're eating, you know, yogurt for protein and for calcium and for probiotics, and you're eating cheese or milk because that's where all your calcium is. We need calcium for our bones. And we're doing all of this stuff, yet you have an unhealthy gut, then you are not going to digest that food. If you don't digest that food, you're not going to feed the beneficial bone building bacteria that is in our gut. You're not going to have a healthy barrier between the outside world and the inside world. And so we're going to be triggering all of these root causes of bone loss. So it's not just about what you eat, what you shouldn't eat. It's also what is the integrity of your gut? Because the system from mouth to bones, there's a journey there. There's a pathway. And so we have to make sure that we actually get the food that is going in our mouth to go to our bones. So it's not just about what to eat, what not to eat. It really is, for me, you have to have an optimal, healthy system and a healthy gut in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we kind of dive deep into this, I just wanted to briefly kind of talk about osteoporosis a little bit, because I think this is so relevant, obviously, for this community here as well. And we kind of spoke briefly about it before as well. But maybe is there, like, from obviously I work mainly with people with scoliosis who also happen to have osteoporosis. You work mainly with people who have osteoporosis who also might happen to have scoliosis. So from your perspective, do you see there is a link between those two?
Yeah, because we're talking about bones. So our bones is the framework. And so what you and I were speaking about, and what I'd love to say, so osteoporosis is the disease state of bone loss. All day, every day, our bones are building and dissolving. And the dissolving process of bones, part of it is to clean up, to have degenerative old bone dissolve so that new, stronger, fracture-resistant bone can be laid down. That's part of it. And then there's a lot of body mechanisms that require that cause the bones to dissolve, because our bones are our bank for our minerals. That's where 99% of calcium is stored, 40% of magnesium is stored. And those two minerals in particular, calcium and magnesium, are part of the primary minerals, the four primary minerals, the electrolytes of the body. And, you know, with sodium and potassium as well, those are the four big ones. And so your bones dissolve to release those minerals when there's a need. And so some of the needs for that would be acidity in the body, and your body would dissolve those alkalizing minerals. So the building and dissolving process is an all day, every day. It's a regulatory process. It's an internal balance, like a biochemical balance state. And there, that we have to look at what causes it. What are the bone dissolving things that are happening inside of us? What are the bone building things? And like I said, at eight, in our mid 30s, we start to dissolve more than we build. And one of the biggest factors with osteoporosis is it typically happens in post-menopause, because we have hormones that are protective of our bones. We have estrogen and testosterone in particular. And so as we go through menopause and we lose our hormones, or Christine, honestly, even mentally, emotionally, so stress. And I would say that even the perimenopause crowd, like I want to really raise awareness there in the 40-year-old crowd or the 30-year-old, the women that are burning the candle at both ends, that are taking care of families and life. Because there, if there's more stimulation to the dissolving, then you get to that place of menopause where now you lose more hormones, and then bone loss occurs really dramatically after menopause.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am just thinking, I am in this perimenopause crowd. And for me at the moment, one of the major things, and I've talked about this in some videos as well, I am looking to be strong. That's my whole kind of goal right now. I'm not interested in being thin or, you know, losing weight or anything like that. If anything, I probably want to put on weight and really support my bones as I am moving towards menopause. Now, how can I support myself there from that point of view?
Yeah, that's great. And the strength, you're right. So you have to feed your bones. You also have to feed your muscles, because there's a synergistic relationship there. The better quality, stronger muscles, the heavier the muscles, the bones will be stronger and heavier to manage them. And the bigger and stronger your muscles are, the more forces you will apply to your bones that will then cause them to lay down more tissue. So from a physiological, from a musculoskeletal, there's that. Now, when it comes to food, so I like, because you're in the UK, I love to use this analogy. You know the crunchy bar? A crunchy, the candy?
No, I don't think. See, I'm not from the UK, so maybe I didn't grow up with these things.
Okay, but are most of the people...
Is it a cereal bar, or is it a chocolate bar?
No, it's a candy bar. And so most of the people... Okay. My parents are Scottish. I'm actually 100% Scottish. I was born and raised in America, but all my blood is in the UK. So there's a bar called a Crunchy, which on the outside has chocolate and on the inside has honeycomb.
Okay,
and
yes.
That is what our bones are like. Our bones, so the outside, the cortical bone is the outside, like the chocolate. The inside is the honeycomb. And that honeycomb is what diet really plays, where diet really plays a role. And that honeycomb center is what creates fracture resistant bones. So that's what contains, that's what goes into bone quality. So you use the word strength. You want to be stronger as you age. You want really good quality bones. So those would be strong bones. And so this is where food comes in. And if you think about a frame of a house, you see the wood when they're building a house, they put up all the wooden beams, and then they start to put in all the things that make it livable. They put the drywall, the electrical, the plumbing, the stucco, and they make the outside of the house, right? It's the same thing with our bones. We have the center, the scaffolding, we have the calcium and the phosphorus, and the protein matrix or the protein structure. And then we have all the minerals that go on that create the strength, the word strength that you're using. So how do we add more of those minerals? How do we add more of that strength into our bones? And we need to feed them. We need to eat the things that build bones. Mm-hmm. So what are the things that build bones? The things that build bones, there's really important nutrients. You've got protein, which is the structure. And you need to have phosphorus with that and vitamin C. Those are all like synergistic that help to create that outside. So vitamin C could be found in citrus fruits, colorful fruits, to have your vitamin C. Protein, of course, can be found in animal products, and there are plenty of non-animal products out there, food-based products. I love to support vegans and vegetarians because what I say, I've done every food thing there is. I've done raw for a while and vegan, and I actually have not had red meat since I was 20. So I myself haven't had red meat. I do eat fish and chicken. Yeah. If it's wild, sustainable, and all of that. And I've gone on and off of that. But when it comes to protein, protein is really the building blocks of all body tissues. And you can find plenty of protein sources in vegetables. You could find it in legumes, in nuts, in seeds. So there are sources. And if you are vegetarian or vegan, definitely focusing on that. And that is something that I think a lot of the studies are starting to show us, is that as we age, we need more protein. Mm-hmm. So finding protein in food, where, and just really looking at labels, because it's a macronutrient, carbs, fats, and protein. It's one of the listed items. So definitely looking for the content of protein is important.
And in terms of, is there a kind of a number of what we should be aiming for?
There is. So on my podcast, I interviewed an MD, a functional MD, and then a clinical nutritionist back to back one day. And it was like, okay, this is like the message. I kept hearing it. So 100 grams is about the number that they say. And I asked actually Dr. Mark Hyman, I was at a taping of his book signing, and I asked him, Dr. Mark Hyman, is it 100 calories for a 6 foot tall man and for a 5 foot tall woman? And he was like, yeah, because how do we know, right? That's even, how do we really know how many? So what I'm going to suggest, 100 is a lot. And if you're an animal eater, yes, you could get that. 4 eggs in the morning, a pretty sizable chicken breast or whatever, and a piece of fish at those meals. Like if you had those 3 meals, you're going to get close to 70 grams right there. And then you could add more. It's a little bit harder when you're doing vegan and vegetable sourcing for that. I like to say shoot for 75 grams. And are you 5 foot tall? If you're 5 foot tall, how much food can you eat? You know, so there's that too, like what makes sense. And that's important to take note of as well. So protein is one of the areas to think of. If you're going to be looking at reading labels, looking for protein sources. And I'd love to share a little tip here with your listeners. A lot of people know about chia seed pudding.
Yeah.
Chia seed pudding, chia seeds have protein. Basil seeds are a new seed that I've really been sharing a lot of because it has a lot of calcium in it. Hemp seeds have 10 grams. You could sprinkle that on salad. You could actually have a little shaker of seeds. I studied Ayurveda at the Deepak Chopra Center, and they talked about this little shaker of sesame seeds, which have calcium in there. So adding a little more seeds maybe to either a handful of seeds or on top of salads or something, or maybe even in a breakfast oatmeal if people are eating oatmeal. So protein is number one. And then there's the four musketeers of bone health.
Okay.
So the four musketeers, calcium. We need calcium. So we need calcium. Then we need vitamin D because vitamin D helps calcium get absorbed. Then we need magnesium. Magnesium puts calcium into the solution to be delivered to the bones. And then we need vitamin K, which actually delivers calcium into the bones. So the four musketeers, calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, and vitamin K. And so those are important nutrients. And then we have some cofactors and some helper nutrients, manganese, boron, iron, zinc, phosphorus. I think I mentioned that a little earlier, copper. So and potassium. I'm going to say potassium plays a role here. So the four musketeers for sure, protein for sure. And then from a gut health perspective, to make sure you're digesting and absorbing, you need to optimize your microbiome. So we need fiber. And the number of fiber to look for or to aim for daily is 30 grams.
Right. Is that sounds a little bit easier, I think, than the protein. Is that true? Is that correct?
You know, you have to be eating vegetables, and so it depends, like on when and beans and things like that. You know what I find, Christine, is that when I think about my gut, if I prioritize my gut over all else, and I think about feeding my gut so my gut is healthy, which is really where my focus is, then you start to look at labels. You start to choose foods that are going to have the things in them that you need. Mm-hmm. And 30 grams of fiber, like I made adzuki bean soup yesterday, and I looked at that. It was 7.8 grams per serving. And I thought, okay, so that's a third of what I need. And then an avocado, a half of an avocado has 7 grams of fiber. So that would be 14. And I think I started my morning, I had eggs. So the protein, I had an avocado, fiber, really good fat, and a lot of good nutrients. And then greens. So you're going to get fiber in your greens. So I would say that 30 might sound like it's easy, yet not everybody is eating the optimal amount of vegetables. And so that sometimes is a little bit harder for people, I would say, is fiber.
Yes, when you break it down like that, that's for sure. And I'm just kind of thinking about my lunch and what I had. I did have half an avocado, so at least I won't think of it.
But even what we're just saying right there, Christine, that's amazing what you just said, because you're actually thinking now. So I'm getting you to actually go back to lunch and think about what was in my lunch and was it what I needed it to be for my gut, for my bones, for my body. And in the premenopausal range, we want to think about optimizing hormones. And so good fats are going to support your hormones. The seeds that I'm talking about, there's actually something called seed cycling. And it's in the health world where there's 4 different nuts and seeds that you use for hormone balancing. And they do it if you're menstruating throughout the month. They're sunflower, pumpkin, sesame, and flax, I believe. And so these 4 seeds, and you can actually make your own crackers with seeds and have crackers with maybe some hummus on it or avocado. Instead of doing like avocado toast, you would do crackers with avocado and your crackers for all the seeds. So focusing on how do we make this easy? Because this is what
people
Yeah, they're like, Debbie, tell me what to eat.
Yes, exactly. Tell me what to eat. I can do the seeds. I can sprinkle them into my cereal. That's okay. Into my salads as well.
And raising your awareness is the big thing. So protein, fiber, and then making sure you get your minerals. And when you look at the labels, you definitely get the macros. We get the fat, we get the protein, we get the carbohydrates, and you do get the fiber. And so you do get those are on the top of the chart. Now, the below the minerals, they're not always displayed. They have vitamin D, calcium, iron is there, and sometimes potassium. So quite often those are like they'll be the minimal listed ingredients there. And then sometimes you could see even more ingredients that are listed. And we need to eat the foods that, you know, so I say, if we think about our bones and our gut, our bones, it's the very center of us, right? And it's the storage for your minerals. And then your gut is how everything comes in your body. So if you really think about those top of the funnel, what am I looking at? What am I going to focus on? Then you're going to be supporting your hormones and you'll be supporting your breast health, your neurological health, your digestive health, your cardiovascular health, your brain health, and all of the other factors that are the other body systems that are important for optimizing health.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. I mean, I always say this about to the people in my membership as well. You are more than just scoliosis, first of all, and you're more than just your bones. So you've got the whole system really that works together and that wants to be supported, obviously. So can we talk about those 4 musketeers a little bit? How do we get those in? Calcium, magnesium, I can see it a little bit easier. But what about vitamin D? How do we get that, especially here in the UK?
So you're right. Bone synthesizing vitamin D by the skin is definitely the optimal. And there's a certain trajectory. There's a certain line in the globe where people who live, like I'm in Los Angeles, so I'm in the ideal place, but there is a certain band around the Earth where we have the optimal exposure and the greatest potential to develop that synthesized vitamin D in our skin. And then there's other factors, skin color matters for people being able to synthesize vitamin D. So vitamin D is actually, it's a vitamin and it's a hormone, and it's a major regulatory aspect of bone health. So vitamin D, optimizing vitamin D is critical to many factors of health, including bones. Most vitamin D sources are animal-based. So okay. For vegetarians and vegans, there are vegan and vegetarian sources. There's mushrooms. And Christine, if you put your mushrooms out in the sun, well, in the UK, I don't know how much sun you're going to be able to find. But if you put your mushrooms out in the sun, it actually causes them to even make more vitamin D, believe it or not. Wow. So you want to put mushrooms out to sunbathe, which I know is a crazy.
So I buy my mushrooms and then I put them in the sun.
Yes. And then you eat them.
And then I eat them.
Yes. And that will give them, they'll be sunbathing and releasing even more. So vitamin D, harder to get for sure from food sources, unless you're eating animal-based products.
Yeah.
And so,
you were saying that the color of the skin. So the lighter I am, the easier or the harder it is to absorb that?
Darker skin people have a harder time.
Yeah. They need to be in the sun longer.
Yeah, they need sun exposure. And actually in most cases they need supplementation.
Right.
Yeah. So vitamin D definitely. So if you're going to take a supplement, which I honestly, I think there's certain supplements I think that most of us need. So I run functional labs and I work privately with women. I put together programs. I do stool labs and hair mineral analysis. And I put together programs and work with women over like 3 to 6 month period. And I put together customized protocols. And so what I've learned over the years is I think that there's a general supplementation regime that most of us need. And vitamin D is one of those. Right. And so vitamin D, 2000 to 2500 IUs, if you're taking a supplement, is a general. Now, if you take too much vitamin D, like 5,000 and 10,000, and if your serum, if your blood tells you that your vitamin D is really low, you might need high dosing for a short period of time. But if you take too much vitamin D in supplementation, it actually is negative for magnesium. And magnesium is one of those four musketeers. And they are four musketeers because they have to work together. Right. You have to have the vitamin D to get the calcium to get absorbed. The magnesium puts the calcium into solution to be delivered to the bones. If it's not in that solution, it doesn't get delivered to the bones. And the vitamin K takes it to the bones. So the having the vitamin D, the supplement, I think for most of us, it's going to be something that we need. And then there's also from a synthesizing vitamin D in your skin, that is actually going to have to be during the sunny time. So it's usually a June through September where you actually have the opportunity to maximize your vitamin D. So focusing on that, whether it's supplement during the winter, exposing yourself, and when you expose yourself during the summer, the sites where we have the most receptors for vitamin D synthesis is on the torso, the front of the body, the back of the body, the arms and the legs. So, and I've had skin cancer 3 times. Okay. My wow. First time was when I was 14, and I've asked my dermatologist about this because mm-hmm. I want to make sure I get that exposure during the summer. 10 to 15 minutes without sunscreen is been recommended to me by a couple of dermatologists as a safe thing to do, even with somebody with my history of having skin cancer 3 times. Mm-hmm. So 10 to 15 minutes on the front, 10 to 15 minutes on the back. And that's during
the summer. So you can protect your face.
Yeah, I protect my face on my chest too, because you're still young. Yeah. But Christine, as you start to get closer to that 6-0 mark and then probably beyond, the skin just doesn't, you know, it's not quite as what it was. So I try to protect this area too. And also this is where I had skin cancer the last time.
Yeah, in my chest. Of course.
But yes, the arms, the legs, 10 to 15 minutes, they say that that's okay.
Okay, so we need to get our arms and legs out here in the UK. That's tricky. And I know this. I do take a supplement for vitamin D because it's just half of the year. It's just impossible, basically. We're going to be all wrapped up.
Yeah, it's true, right? It's not so easy if you live in a place where the sun doesn't appear to be shining through. Right? So,
Oh,
okay.
I had a few other questions here. I just wanted to check while we're kind of on the supplements. Shalina from from our community, she asked about collagen. She's asking what kind of collagen is recommended for scoliosis and osteoporosis. Any ideas, any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, you did ask a question too about the link between osteoporosis and scoliosis. And I did bring up the analogy of the candy bar where you had the outside is the hard bone and the inside is the honeycomb. And so that's what we're feeding is that honeycomb structure. Whether even with osteoporosis or scoliosis, we want strong bones. So collagen is part of the matrix, the scaffolding that creates that structure in our bones. Now, there are studies recently that are indicating that collagen supplementation could be beneficial. It's actually a huge business. I want to say $200 to $300 million supplement industry is collagen. I personally don't take collagen myself because I'm not sure yet if we know enough, if we really know. And the way that we get that white collagen powder is typically ground up cow parts. It's the ligaments and tendons, the soft tissue of the animal. Like, I like to know what the heck I'm eating. I like to be as natural as
I
possible.
agree.
Gummy candies that we eat. If you look at gummy candies, the ingredients, not the vegan ones, of course, but the ingredients in collagen powder, what is it? It's ground up ligaments,
Gelatin,
tendons, and gelatin and hoofs of animals. That's what it is. So I need to ask myself, would my ancestors have been eating this much ground up cow parts every day to have the bones that they had? Like, does it make sense that we need that? What was the process of getting that collagen white powder? You had to kill that animal, you had to harvest that, you had to clean it off so it looks all white and powdery without bits of other dark stuff in there. So maybe I'm unusual in that way, but I want to know why. Why am I eating this white powder? And do I need that white powder? And would I have in nature had access to this much white powder to eat for my bones? That said, there are studies that are showing that there's certain collagen supplements, powders that have been supportive in the bone remodeling process. And then I want to know, wait a minute, what else was that person doing or those people doing that they were studying? Was it just the white powder that they were ingesting that then showed in the studies that the bones were getting stronger? Or were there other factors these people in the studies were doing? So I don't take collagen.
There's too much we don't know, isn't there? It's too many unknown factors there. I
And
agree.
how does your stomach digest that? What happens when it goes into the small intestines? What does it affect there? Is it good for the gut microbes when it gets to the small intestines? Does it do anything with the mucosal barrier? I don't know. So those are questions that I would want to know about.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Anne is asking, are there any foods we should be avoiding? You said it already briefly in the beginning. There's things we should eat and there's things we should avoid. Anything, like, especially if we kind of look at scoliosis, osteoporosis, bone health, are there any kind of no-nos?
Yeah, there are. And this is hard. This gets to
Oh,
be really
no.
hard because, yes, okay. The number one food to avoid for your bones. So, whether we're trying to keep our bones strong and not have osteoporosis, or trying to keep our bones strong so they could stay on top of each other and not break down in the way that they do, the number one food to avoid is gluten.
Oh no.
That means the breads, the pastries, the muffins, the bagels, that is the toasties. And I will tell you in the UK, because I go there often, my daughter lives in London. I go there often. All my blood, I said, was there. I go to Scotland all the time to visit my family. It's everywhere. Gluten is everywhere. And it's the toast that we have in the morning with our eggs. It's then the bread that's our sandwich, or the toasties, or the pastries that we see. It's the pizza, the pasta. And that's what we see the most of. It's also in ketchup, in soy sauce. It's stabilizing sauces and salad dressings. It's coating cheese if you buy sliced cheese so it doesn't clump together. And for those that have had kids and have ever made paper mache, have you ever made paper mache?
Yeah.
So when we make paper mache with our kids, we blow up a balloon to make a piggy bank, right? You blow up a balloon, you take newspaper and you tear it up. And what do you mix? You mix flour and water to make a paste or a glue that then hardens. What do you think that paste and that glue does over time to these beautiful, moist mucous membranes of our stomach, of our gut lining? What is it like when it gets that coating in there?
It dries them out, probably.
Yeah. So gluten, here's the reasons why no gluten. Gluten, it contributes to leaky gut. Leaky gut is when your intestines, your gut lining starts to separate, where all the cells are together and then there's a separation. And when there's a separation, things can leak into your body that shouldn't. And if things leak into your body, either they're not properly digested or there are certain toxins that leak into the system, now your immune system reacts. And that's where inflammation is triggered. And inflammation is one of the main root causes of bone loss. And so they're actually the functional medicine doctors are actually calling osteoporosis an inflammatory disease because it's that inflammation. So yeah. It's going to affect your gut lining. It's going to create more space for the food to go through into your system. So that's one. It also negatively affects your gallbladder, secretes bile, and bile is what breaks down fats. Vitamin D, vitamin K, two of those four musketeers are fat-soluble vitamins. So we need the bile to break down the fat that's in the food into the form we need to use it. And so one of the factors, there's a mechanism in gluten that affects the bile secretion. So we're going to interrupt fat metabolism, stimulate inflammation with leaky gut. And then one other big factor is that our thyroid is our master metabolizing hormone in our body. And every single cell has a site on the outside where the thyroid hormone comes to support metabolism in the body. And gluten mimics thyroid. So if you have gluten in your system, it will go and attach to the cell membrane, take up a parking spot. So when the thyroid hormone comes to get the cell to make energy and to do its job, there's no parking spot for it. So it negatively affects thyroid. And there's a lot of links that I see in women I work with osteoporosis. And I'm sure many of the women that are in your community as well with scoliosis that have thyroid issues as well.
Yeah.
So gluten is absolutely. Yes, right? So they're going to have thyroid issues, they're going to have leaky gut, and they're going to not break down fats. That's the main reasons for gluten. So gluten off the charts. It's the number one food to avoid for bone health.
Okay. What am I going to have with my eggs then?
So first of all, I would say it's so most of us have heard we shouldn't eat processed foods, right?
Yes.
And most of us would say, I'm healthy. I don't eat processed foods. Bread is a processed food.
Yeah.
A processed food. We think, okay, I'm not going to eat the chips. I'm not going to eat those gross cereals. I'm not going to eat those prepared meals. Bread is a processed food and it's a convenience food and it's what we've become accustomed to. So there we go with our eggs. So the first step is try to find gluten-free bread, which typically is not as good because the gluten in wheat is the protein in the wheat that makes it stick together and gives it its structure, right? That chewy consistency of bread, that is what comes from gluten. So when you take that element out and you're using the alternatives, it's a little bit more flaky, harder. There are some companies that do great gluten-free products, but I would say the first step is to go gluten-free with your processed foods. So you could do pea pasta, lentil pasta, edamame or soybean based, and that has to be organic and non-GMO if you're doing soy. You could find noodle substitutes. Then when it comes to toast or bagels, you could find substitutes for that. That becomes step one. And then I would say step two, a little farther away, you don't even need that anymore. You mm-hmm. see it as a clogging processed item. So you have to first, you have to do baby steps.
Yeah, because it's a little bit like if you want to be vegan, you're going to substitute in the beginning, but then after a while you don't need to because you just eat differently, right?
Right. And another good thing, like I know here in Los Angeles, we have a really big influence of Mexican food. So making tortillas and making eggs that way. So the corn is gluten-free. Make sure it's organic and non-GMO. And then there's other flour tortilla types. There's cassava flour, almond flour, where you could roll up and make a burrito that's a gluten-free option with some salsa and avocado, good for gut health. You're going to have great vitamin nutrients in that avocado. So those are some of the substitutes. Also oatmeal. And if you do oatmeal, throwing in some flax seeds, some chia seeds, some basil seeds, maybe some almonds, almond milk, putting in a spoonful of an almond butter or another a different nut butter, or did I say pumpkin seeds on top? It's one of my favorites because it's really high in a lot of bone minerals, yeah. That pumpkin seeds. So you could do that with almond milk as well, because the next big food that we have to avoid is dairy.
Okay. I can live with that. That's a little bit better than bread, that you're telling me not to eat bread anymore.
Okay, well, dairy becomes a big thing because women are like, what do you mean?
Well, cheese, yes. Okay, yeah.
Well, not just that, but when people have calcium, everyone thinks they need more calcium when they have osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. And yes, 99% of the calcium is in our bones, but we have to figure out why are our bones losing the calcium and going to the root causes of the bone loss and not just trying to throw more calcium with supplements or with dairy products. So the thing about dairy products, it's really mostly about the way we process dairy. We artificially inseminate the cows. We take the calves away right when they're born. Whenever you milk anything, I have three children, you have children. And if you breastfeed, you will have cracked and bleeding nipples because that's part of the process. So when we milk our cows, there's blood and pus that come off of the teats when we're capturing that milk. We then need to use antibiotics in it in order to neutralize that. So now we have that in the milk supply. We are the only mammals that drink milk after we're weaned.
Yeah.
Should we be drinking, if we were living out in the fields, I go back to what sounds natural to me. Would we be having that much yogurt, that much cheese, and that much milk to drink every day? If we were raising our cows and needed them to feed their babies first before we took their milk, to then make the extra things that we as humans would want to have. So the biggest thing about dairy is it's inflammatory for most people. And there's two proteins in particular in dairy that are very inflammatory. And osteoporosis is an inflammatory disease. So we want to really reduce inflammation. So dairy becomes another big one. And most women are eating a yogurt every day for probiotics, for protein, and for calcium. And there's a doctor in the gut world that actually took 24 yogurts from a whole food store and tested them in her lab for their probiotic content. And only 3 out of 24 had sufficient probiotics in them. So I think even that is a, you know, would we be eating fermented milk every day? Would we be milking our cows and have access to that every day? If you are going to eat cheese, the harder cheeses have been studied to show that they might be okay and could be supportive. I run functional labs. I run a blood test for food sensitivities on ladies I work with. And what I have found in 98% of the people, 99 that I've ran a wheat zoomer on for gluten, 99% of them were reactive to gluten. Okay, so gluten for every single person I've ever run that test on is sensitive. Dairy, I'd say about 85 to 90% of the women with osteoporosis that I've ran a blood IgG, IgE, IgA, and IgM, which are immunoglobulin response to foods. Those are true food sensitivities. I found 80 to 85% were sensitive to dairy. So this is not just, oh, I'm saying this to say this. This is what I've observed over the years running hundreds or thousands of labs on women with osteoporosis.
What about those substitutes and like, I don't know, like a coconut yogurt or anything those like that?
Yes, those are good. Make sure soy is organic. Right. Here's some calcium sources of calcium. So in my podcast that I interviewed a functional medicine doctor, she said, I tell all the ladies I work with that have osteoporosis to go off dairy, to go off gluten, and to tell them that where most of their calcium will come from is broccoli.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, wow. But some calcium sources of in food is nuts, fruits, vegetables, rice, legumes, seeds, sardines, and salmon. So small fish like sardines that have bones in them, salmon, anything with bones in it is a place to get your calcium.
Okay, we can do that. I think we can do that. What about turmeric? That's one of the, that's another one that always comes up. I think, especially when people think about pain, kind of back pain and inflammation, is that something that you have found beneficial or recommended or?
Yeah, so turmeric, two different things about that. I travel a lot. And when I was in Bali, I was talking to one of the guides and he said that that's the thing they use the most. They grow the roots everywhere. They use it on their face when they have inflammation. He was making a paste for his grandma because she was having swelling in her face. They've used it medicinally. They have teas, a beverage they make called jamu. In India, they make golden milk for turmeric. So indigenous populations around the world have turned to turmeric for anti-inflammatory properties. And it does have those properties. What the guy in Bali was telling me is that it doesn't seem to be as effective as it used to be. Now, I don't know if that means that we're more stressed out and have more things happening in our lives, more foods we've been introduced to around the world that we brought in. Maybe we're more stressed in life, so there's more inflammation to manage. Turmeric has been shown to reduce inflammation systemically, and they usually partner it with black pepper. And the reason why they partner with black pepper is because black pepper is a stomach lining irritant, and it will agitate the stomach lining, which will then allow the turmeric to go systemic into your system, to your joints, to deal with pain in your body. The other benefit of turmeric is if you allow it to stay intestinal and in your gut, it can manage gut inflammation. Then you would want to take the turmeric without the black pepper, or without any spice that would be a gut lining irritant, to keep it in your gut. So when I do gut healing protocols, I'll do a 2-week no black pepper turmeric. And then when we're doing systemic turmeric, I'll do it with the curcumin.
It's so interesting. Very interesting. I just wanted to, let me find that last question and then I've got one more and then I know you're a busy lady, so I'm gonna let you go. So Laura was asking, I don't eat too much meat. I'm aware I need to eat proteins and dairy products. But on the other hand, without eating too much fat. So what would be the best balanced foods regarding our bone density and arteries health at the same time? So no meat, but she wants her proteins, but not too much fat.
So I just want to say a little thing about fat, Christine, because I know I'm in my late 50s. And so I grew up in the 80, 90 timeframe and mostly the 80s. Fat-free was the big thing. Yep. And everything we were eating was fat-free. What people don't realize is that our cells, we don't have a cell wall. We have cell membranes. And our cell membrane is a phospholipid layer. It's a fat layer on every single cell that we have in our body. Also, the word cholesterol has gotten a bad rap and we have a very old-fashioned approach to cholesterol. Cholesterol is actually how we make our hormones in our body, and that's a fat. So fat is needed to make hormones that are protective of our bones, that are protective of many factors, our hormones, and many factors that are important. So I would say to reframe the way we think about fat and eat good fats. We need good quality fat. We need to have avocado oil, coconut oil, and olive. Those are the three best choices. And we need to avoid seed oils because seed oils are inflammatory. Inflammation leads to bone loss. It leads to pain and a lot of other breakdown in our body. So we want to make sure we're choosing good fat sources, and we want to minimize the seed oils. When you're looking for protein sources that are not in the animal world, this is where you would turn to your, well, the nuts are going to have more fat. So that would probably be where that fat, looking at fat there, but your legumes. And so looking at legumes and even the seeds. So we're looking at the chia seeds and the basil seeds. We're going to see a higher fat content there, but looking at legumes for protein and vegetables. And for those that are vegan, here's what I'd like you to tell people, because everyone's so worried. Where are you getting your protein? Where are you getting your protein? Well, an elephant, a gorilla, a horse, and a cow are four of the largest land animals, and they are vegan. And all those muscles and all that tissue is built with grass or greens. So we do have the structural aspects of building in the plant world. And I have a sheet. I work with a physician in the UK, Dr. Nick Birch. He's an orthopedic surgeon, spinal surgeon, actually. Mm-hmm. And he put together a sheet of paper. We have a course that we put together on DEXA scans and REMS, like diagnostics for bone health. And there's a sheet on the main nutrients for bone health. And he color coded it on where do they exist. And it's amazing, because when you look at where can you find now calcium, people think of dairy. You could find it in nuts, fruits, vegetables, rice, legumes, and seeds. Those are all vegan, vegetarian world. Vitamin D, harder. You're going to get that in mushrooms and in fortified things. But I say stay away from fortified. Vitamin K2. Now that's another typically animal-based world. Fermented foods have them. And one is natto. Have you ever heard of natto? No. They're fermented soybeans, and they're in Japan. I've never had them. They're very stinky and slimy. And I say I'm going to do it. I know I will one day. I haven't yet done it. And some of my Japanese clients or students or friends tell me, oh, they love it. So maybe I'll bring myself around to trying it. Or I will at one point. Vitamin C, which is really important, is in fruits and vegetables. Vitamin B9 folate is another cofactor of bone remodeling. That's in green vegetables, seeds, nuts, legumes. So in the vegetable world, so many of the nutrients we need exist. Mm-hmm. And so for the protein in that world, look at the contents. Do a research on what does a serving of broccoli have? How much protein does broccoli have? Start to look at labels looking for protein. It's there. It's one of the macronutrients. It's listed in all nutritional labels. And start to get yourself, start to keep a tracker, like a food diary, to look throughout the day and try to get close to that 75 mark for grams of protein.
Yeah. So if you had to narrow it down to five things where you would say everybody with scoliosis, with osteoporosis needs to add this into their diet, are there kind of five things you could tell us that we should buy or we should introduce, grow maybe.
Okay, so I'll give you five, taking into account all the different dietary aspects. Well, one of them would be green vegetables. So that could be lots of different things and seasonally eating. So whether you go to a farmer's market or you go to try to do seasonal greens, stir fry them, don't boil things and throw away water, cook those nicely. So that's going to help your gut, that's going to help your bones. And that's going to help your hormones and all that. So greens, and that's a big category, right? Mm-hmm. Fruit. And if you eat fruit, try not to have it with anything else. You could have it on your salad, you know, a little bit of fruit there. But if you do fruits like an apple is really good for gut health. It helps the lower species in the lower part of the intestines. And apple pectin is used in a lot of binders, which help to mop up the gunk internally. So having an apple, and maybe not necessarily every day, but having an apple, it could be another good thing, or fruit, and having it away from other foods, because fruit is actually the fructose, the sugar, is metabolized by the liver, and glucose is metabolized in the cells. So trying to have those apart, and then finding sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are amazing. Find organic, scrub the skins, roast them, have them in bowls, have them in salads. They've got a lot of nutrients in them, and they have fiber, which actually feeds the good beneficial bone building bacteria in your gut. and it makes what I call a dump truck. So a dump truck is your poop. Like what's going to come out of your body the next day, that's your dump, your trash truck for tomorrow. So you want whatever cellular debris is in your body to leave your body the next morning when you have a bowel movement. So there's a lot of bulk in sweet potatoes and even really regular potatoes too. Now, sweet potatoes are going to be a little bit more nutrient dense and they're a lower glycemic index. They're going to stay in the system. They're going to regulate, manage blood sugar better. So, but sweet potatoes is one of them. Avocados, if you like that, because it's fiber, nutrients, really good fat. And then some kind of nut, seed, or legume. So I'm just trying to keep it general so that, you know, if you try to, I don't like to just say eat this thing, and this thing, because then I want, you know, like people are eating prunes, 5 prunes a day, because there was a study that showed an increase in bone density with 5 prunes or 7 prunes a day. Yet they're super high in fiber. I run gut labs, stool labs. I find a lot of women in this age range with scoliosis, with osteoporosis or osteopenia have yeast issues, which is a whole other topic. And that's internal imbalance with your yeast and bacteria. So you don't want too much sugar. And this population seems to eat a lot of sugar when they're giving up fat.
Okay, so we've got our greens. We've got our fruit, but away from the other foods, so have it separately. Then we've got our sweet potatoes.
Avocado.
Avocado. Yes, nuts, happy about that. Seeds. And then we'll have our nuts or seeds. And variety is what I'm hearing from you as well.
Right, seasonal as well. Yes, and you can make your own little like shaker where you have like sesame seeds, flax seeds, maybe some other seeds that you put on your salads or hemp seeds.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, Debbie. That, I mean, amazing. I could talk to you for a very, very long time. Now, I know there'll be lots of people very, very interested in working with you and hearing more about what you do. So how can they work with you? How can they get in touch?
So my website is debbierobinson.com, debirobinson.com. And I have a signature lifestyle-based program where I share all of this, the gut, the bones, what to eat, how to move, sleep, all that, called Healthy Gut, Healthy Bones. That is my lifestyle-based course. So they can find out all that information at debbierobinson.com.
Brilliant. And that is, if they can take that in their own time, or how does it work?
Is it? Yeah, well, I call it a DIY because I want to be involved with everyone that comes through me, to me. I want to work with them. So I have so many resources in the online portal. It's self-paced and it's dripped out. So I do it methodically. It's a step-by-step approach. It's comprehensive. It's really about 42 steps. And it's now try this and try this and learn this and just raising your awareness slowly and surely on what is the lifestyle approach to having stronger bones, stronger muscles, stronger body, which is also going to help with scoliosis because we need that integrity of the system to be optimized. And so, and then there's 2 live calls a month where it's an ask me anything, because so that where do you need support and guidance and how can I show up? And then we have a community aspect as well. So then you can have others help you as well. So really creating this community of women that want to be in control and in charge of their body and their bones as they age.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you so much. I am sure that everybody who's been listening, we had quite a few people live here. We had Stephanie from Pennsylvania, for example, and some others watching live. I'm sure they all agree. This was amazing. So yeah, thank you so much. And yeah, I'm excited to learn more as well.
Yeah, I am as well. Thanks all so much for having me.
Thank you, Debbie. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, I would be super grateful if you could leave me a 5-star rating and review, which will help me to create lots more amazing content. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram at yogaberry.scoliosis or visit my website at www.yogaberry.net.